I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Gut Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
Although I went through a tough time, it showed me how someone could still love me at my lowest and at my weakest, because the love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
So deep down, we all know what we want in life. We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season of the Gut Glow Podcast is brought to you with thanks to Ireland's leading pharmacy chain, Lloyds Pharmacy. Whether you're looking for advice or support with allergies, pregnancy, vitamins, or skincare, their highly trained teams can make it easier for you and your family. Visit lloydspharmacy.ie for all your healthcare and well-being needs. Lloyds Pharmacy. Say hello to the people that know. Hello, I hope you are well and enjoying the bank holiday weekend. It's Jamie's birthday, so I wanted to say a massive happy birthday to him, and we will be celebrating over the next couple of days, so I'm so looking forward to that. The Gut Glow Wellness Programme is in full swing. With this online course, we wanted to give you the tools to lead a happy and more fulfilled life. So the content is there. You can complete the course in your own time. You can take a module a week or do it all in one go. It's completely up to you. I'm loving the feedback, especially around healthy habits and how people feel ready after watching our content to go on that journey with healthy habits. So we do have a sale on at the moment, down from 85 to 69 euro. And you can check out more over on thegutglow.ie. Now, on to a very, very special person. I have wanted to chat to Guy O'Leary on my podcast for a very long time, and it felt like this week was pretty good timing. I would love you to go on this journey with this podcast. I don't want to tell you too much about Guy and what he's been through. I will say he is one of the most inspiring people that I've ever met. He's been to hell and back over the last few years after being diagnosed with bowel cancer in 2017. But when you hear this story and what he has done over the last few years, I hope, like me, you will be inspired to love your life and live each day like you know you should. I watched Guy swim for a mile in the sea on Tuesday evening. He swam a mile a day in May, 31 miles in the sea, after being diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and making a full recovery. I know that words like inspiring and amazing are used so much these days, but Guy O'Leary really is one of the most inspiring people that I've ever met. I hope you feel the same way I did after recording this podcast. He's a really special person, and I hope you enjoy this podcast. Guy, welcome to the Gut Glow Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Georgie.
I have to say, I was out yesterday watching you swim. I didn't want to be the only person crying because I didn't know anyone that was there and no one else was crying, but I felt emotional watching you come in, the hugs, the support from your friends and family. It was beautiful to watch. You know, having been through such a tough time, is it nice to have those moments when, you know, everyone's happy and there's smiles and it seems carefree?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a funny one with the swim. A lot of people get emotional doing the swim because they're thinking about loved ones who have cancer or loved ones who've been through cancer and haven't made it. And so emotion's kind of a big part of it for some reason. It's not by design. It's just people start thinking about, you know, people who are going through cancer. And the whole 31 miles, there was always some emotion going through it. But I actually thought I'd be more emotional yesterday, but I was more happy coming up the slip, and it was great to see everyone there. And it was a nice thing yesterday.
Yeah, it was gorgeous to watch. I was so delighted to be a part of it. Let's go back in time a little bit to your life before, I suppose, it changed forever. What was your life like? You'd moved to London.
Yeah, I moved to London. I'd been there a few years. I work for a company called Cantor Fitzgerald, investment banking, and yeah, interesting job. I keep very fit just normally. I always look back on, you know, before cancer, and I would always say, like, I was having a great time with life. Like, everything was just, you know, going great. And, you know, health wise, I really can't remember ever going to the doctor. You know, I was kind of fully fit. I did loads of different sports, and yeah, just very happy. I think we got married on New Year's Eve in 2016. So yeah, I was really flying and absolutely loved what I was doing and loved life. So yeah, it was a real shock when everything started to come down around me.
And you know, it was your job stressful? Were you living that London life that we all hear about that's so hectic and busy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I suppose the sector I work in is pretty stressful all the time. But I think you enjoy what you do, and some days are stressful and some days are you know, less stressful. And, you know, hopefully most of it's fun, and the people you work with are great. So, you know, yeah, it's a stressful job. But I think you're right about the London kind of thing. Even on the weekends, just meeting your friends, because it's not like, you know, me popping in to see you takes 10 minutes. It's just sometimes your friends are living, it's just a big city, and it everything seems to take a long time, and everything's quite, you know, scheduled on the weekends or after work. So I think it's a more stressful city than living in Dublin. Yeah.
And did you think that you'd stay in London for a long time, or did you see it as just a stint?
I think I miss the sea. Just London is a really big city, and it's pretty tight and cramped no matter where you go. And you know, they've great parks and everything like that. But yeah, I miss the kind of openness of being on the sea in Dublin, and being able to, you know, get out into the mountains in Wicklow or the Dublin Mountains pretty quickly. So no, I was always wanted to move, you know, out of London and back towards the sea or something like that. So it's a great city, and it's really fun, and every minute's filled up with something to do. So I love living there, and it's a brilliant city. I think I definitely like being by the sea.
Your gorgeous wife, Aoife, who I met yesterday, beautiful person. She was on at you to go get a check, was she?
Yeah, so, I mean, she's the real hero of my story, because 100% I wouldn't be here talking to you if it wasn't for Aoife. So, for a number of reasons, but my father had stage one cancer about a year before I got diagnosed, and Aoife was just, you know, constantly on to me to go and get checked. Just purely, I'd never had a symptom of cancer, and I still have never had a symptom of cancer, strangely, but she was just on to me, go and get checked, you know, just out of precaution. And actually, for the type of cancer he had, they don't recommend you even get checked until you're in your 50s. So, you know, for me to go and get checked was a pretty strange thing. And I think, you know, all the pieces fell into place quite nicely, because Aoife made sure that I went and got checked. Then I went to a GP who actually said, okay, I'll send you to get checked, because she easily could have just said, you know, you don't need to get checked, certainly until your 40s, but, you know, this is recommended for your 50s. So, you know, to get those kind of lucky breaks was pretty key. But, you know, if Aoife hadn't have been pushing me there and I had even waited another couple of months, the outcome would have been completely different, probably.
For lots of people, like you were saying, you had no sign of cancer. So it's almost like you're breaking your fall if you have a symptom, because you think to yourself, okay, well, there's a possibility. I know there was cancer in your family, so maybe you did think that. But what was, will you ever get over the shock? How were you told?
So my story is kind of twofold, because it kind of came back 3 months later. So I went in to get a scope. So they put a camera inside you and they check you. And I was actually watching it live on TV with the surgeon, who is now a very close friend of mine. We've been through loads together, and he's great. And
what's his name?
His name's Ollie Warren. Yeah, he's brilliant. And I was watching it on TV, and like, I had no reason to even think anything was wrong. I didn't even really know I had a family history. You know, you don't think about these things until after, and you do a bit of research. I knew my dad had it, but other than that, you know, I didn't know there was a huge, huge prevalence of it. So you're watching it live on TV, and you're there with your new pal Ollie, who's 5 years, 6 years older than me, and we get on great. And they come across, you know, what doesn't look right, and you know, things kind of change from there. You can see it's a tumor, you can see it's pretty big. You finish the procedure, and Aoife was waiting for me outside in the waiting room. And I walked out, and she just, you know, just like normal. It was our local hospital, and she said, "Everything okay?" And I just said, you just don't know how to say it. It's a weird thing, and I've said it to a few people. I've been into my, you know, you go into my boss's office, or saying it to Aoife that day, or saying it to a close friend, that it's kind of a weird thing. I have cancer. Like, looks like I have cancer. And she didn't really register with her either. Didn't really register with me, because there's no plan of action at that stage. All they've done is found it, and, you know, let's wait a couple of days and see what the doctor comes up with, and what's the crack, what's going to happen. So we went home, and that was really the start of it. It was a really nice day outside. We went home and kind of let it sink in, I suppose.
Were you like upset that day, or was no, it shock?
Weirdly, we weren't. We were just in total shock, just wondering what's going on. Aoife's a very, she'll be straight on to any doctor she knows, any doctor we know, getting all of the information. So by the time we went back to meet Ollie, I think it was, you know, a couple of days later, he had a plan together, and he's very much, you know, I kind of think of him kind of almost as a professional sports person, that he's got a plan, and he's, you know, he's like, right, you've got stage one cancer. This is what we're going to do. Here's the operation. We're going to cut it out. So yeah, he lays out the plan. It's all very much, you know, procedure. You've got a 90% survival rate off the back of the surgery, and you know, there'll be no treatment afterwards, and he's a very confident guy. And so you go in, and I got a pretty significant surgery, laparoscopic, so you know, very minimally invasive, but they're still taking out a lot of stuff. And I walked out 3 days later, I think, out of hospital, which is just a testament to cancer research, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, 20 years ago, this would have been a full open you up, you know, least a month of recovery, long time in hospital. But to be able to walk out of a major surgery 3 days later is just, I couldn't believe it. And even Ollie came in 2 days later, to me in hospital, and he said, okay, I think let's get you out today. And I said, Ollie, it's 2 days. I mean, just give me a break. And he was just like, okay, fine, you can stay another day. And I was just
like, isn't it great that they get you almost back on your feet physically, like right up and at them? I know Kieran Byrne, who I interviewed, he said his doctors were really like that. Like, bring in your exercise bike, get on your exercise bike. Like, come on.
I tell you a funny thing. Before that surgery, so he shows up to the hospital. He's obviously game face, ready to go. And calls into me and he's like, right, ready to go. Let's do this. And the nurse comes in and I'm all dressed up for surgery. You know, I've got the whole, all the gear on. And the nurse comes in with a wheelchair to wheel me down to surgery. And Ollie just turns around. He's like, what's that for? And she's like, well, we wheel all the patients down to surgery. And he's like, he's walking down with me, just getting up in the bed. He doesn't need a wheelchair. And he's just, you know, they're so straight into it and they're great, yeah.
To make you kind of feel like they believe in you, it kind of gives you confidence about your recovery, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you trust what he says, and you trust when he tells you you're all right to leave, you're fine, like, you know. So I suppose everyone feels like that about their doctor, you know, especially, you know, cancer patients. But anyway, he's one of our heroes anyway.
Yeah. Professor Hill is mine. It's amazing the connection that you feel like you have with them.
Yeah.
Then you walked out that day and you were, I suppose, were you prepared to put this behind you or?
Walked out that day, taking the confidence from Ollie and having done a good bit of research on it. I'd had stage 1 cancer and took some time to recover, obviously, because, you know, you've got a pretty significant cut in your tummy and very like a C-section, and you've got a few bullet holes around you and from the scopes, you take some time and you get your head straight. And then it was Christmas and I was recovering well and I was really back up on my feet. January, February, everything was going great. And just really strangely, I was having a shower one morning, I remember, and I was washing under my arm and I felt a lump under my arm. And being 10 out of 10 paranoid at this stage of anything cancer, I got on the phone to Ollie that morning and I said, and I just was like, he texted me back and he said, I'm just in a conference, I'll call you afterwards. He calls me back and I said, Ollie, I've got this lump under my arm. And he's just like, you know, it couldn't have jumped like that. It's not the normal process for a bowel cancer to move into the lymph nodes in the armpit. But come in tomorrow, we'll check it out. So I went in and he could feel the lump. So he said, okay, we'll schedule a surgery for 2 days later. And that was great. And I was happy about that. And he said, look, it's nothing. It's in your skin. This is probably a non-issue, but cut it out and we'll send it for histology and check it out. And so I went in 2 days later and we couldn't find the lump, just the two of us looking for the lump, couldn't find it anywhere. And he just said, look, it's just one of those things in your body. Everyone gets them. It could have been deodorant or something like that, blocked a pore. But what I'll do is I'll send you for a PET scan just to 100% knock off any chance of anything. And a PET scan is a kind of a radioactive, it's a CT scan, but they inject you with a radioactive kind of dye, and it lights up any cancers in your body on their screen. So it's a very kind of thorough way to check if anything's in there. So I just had bowel cancer. I was a little bit concerned about a lump on my arm, and we went in. And this was the bit where it got, where I think my whole world started to fall down. The first cancer was quite, somehow we were able to take it in our stride, and me and Aoife were able to deal with it quite well. But we went into Ollie's office. I think a couple of days later, and he said, I've got good news and I've got bad news. And he's like, there's nothing going on with the lump under your arm, but cancer's moved from your bowel over to your liver, so you've got Mets in your liver. So that So I knew that that was really bad news. Ollie'd actually sent me to an oncologist before any of this happened, just to check things. And I knew what the probability of survival was if you moved to a stage 4 cancer, which is what I knew now had. So
did they tell you that it was stage 4?
No, they don't. He didn't. I think I'd had enough at that stage to hear 4.
Yeah.
Me and Aoife are in bits. Ollie's also in bits. Me and Ollie are hugging in his office, and it becomes a more complicated thing with a low survival rate. And you know, again, it's, you now are in another situation where you don't have, there's no like strict plan now. There's you know, you have stage 4 cancer. You know what the probability is from looking it up, but you don't know what the next step is. You don't know whether there's going to be a surgery or you know, chemo or radio or what is going to happen here. That is really, you know, we were talking there earlier, that's the bit where I really got concerned. That's when I thought that was it. Kind of don't have a great chance here.
What do you do that day? How do you tell your family?
The whole thing came crashing down because I just kind of recovered, and then now I was stage 4, and then we're just completely, it's all consuming. Stop going to work. Everything stops. And then Aoife had a miscarriage, which just was almost even more devastating than everything else that was going on, which that was probably my lowest point, and probably our lowest point. You know, you think there's not a great chance for me here, and you know, everything that goes with having a miscarriage is horrendous, and I know a lot of people have them, and it's a really tough time. So it's funny. I talk to a lot of cancer patients now. People put me in touch with them, or you know, just from what I've been through, I tend to get put in touch with a lot of people who've just been diagnosed, or people who are going through something, or and it's something I did as well. You get great tips off people who've been through cancer, because they'll tell you, you know, good things to do during chemo or something like that. It tends to, I think, kind of happen a lot. Like the bad news just keeps coming. You know, you get a few bits of bad news and your whole world's falling apart. And that, I think, was probably the worst of it for me. And it's only when you start to get that plan, when Ollie's like, okay, another surgery, we're gonna get cut out the left side of your liver, and then we're gonna get you onto chemo. Once you get the plan together, or maybe that's just the way I'm wired, that I like to know that, okay, here's the path back to being okay. You know, it's gonna be 9 months, but you know, this is kind of route one, and you know, hopefully this works.
How long was it from you in the meeting that day of getting this news to getting the plan? Because that's, you know, like you describe it, it's like you're falling off the edge of a cliff, and with the plan kind of saves you. Yeah. But how long was that limbo for?
It's one of the, I think late stage cancers are more difficult because you can have two or three possible plans, you know.
Okay.
You could do chemo first, you could do surgery first, you know, you could space things out differently. So I think it was about 10 days of us just, or a week or 10 days of getting it right and, you know, talking to Ollie properly and, you know, what's the best probability of this actually working.
And what was going through your mind? Like, I imagine waking up was pretty difficult during that time. Like, what was going through your mind? Were you ready to, I suppose, take it on? Or did you just feel like you'd been absolutely kicked while you were down?
No, I don't think I was ready to take it on. I'd just been, totally flattened. Yeah. Mm. Well, no, a lot of people talk about fighting cancer.
Yeah.
And everyone's got their different mindsets about how they do it. But I never thought about fighting cancer. Like, cancer is just like, I always kind of think if it wants to get you, it's going to get you. And I've seen really strong people. It doesn't matter if you're okay. It's great to be strong and everything, and it does help. But I've seen amazing people over the last couple of years who haven't survived it, and it's got nothing to do with them not trying.
Yeah.
Or anything to do with them not being strong, because they were, or brave. Mm. Fighting cancer. Some people approach it like fighting. Mm. I don't know. It just, maybe that wasn't really my mindset.
Do you think you're going to have to live with cancer forever at this point?
Yeah, I don't think at that stage, I don't think there's a great survival rate. You know, you look it up on the websites, or you can say what the oncologist said last time, and you've got about 10% chance.
And you knew that. Were you okay with looking up that information?
Yeah, because you don't. It's a weird thing to. Yeah, I don't think cancer patients should look up any information on the internet. It's just a terrible thing. Mm. But because you only get a little piece of the information. You don't get the whole picture.
Yeah.
And so that's what I had in my head. And then myself and Aoife went into the oncologist, Dr. Shu, who's another hero of ours. And I just remember, you know, you've gone through now days of just this anxiety and, you know, just awful. And then I just remember these words that he said, "We're going for a cure." And Aoife couldn't believe it, because she thought kind of this was it. And, you know, there's always a discussion whether it's adjuvant or palliative care, whether you're living with it for the rest of your life or they're going to give you a time. Or, you know, you hear this guy say, "We're going for a cure." And it was like, what? I didn't think that was possible. And yeah, so this was like, we walked out of that meeting and it was like, okay.
Do you remember that look with Aoife when he said that, or at the time when
I remember being outside that room afterwards and her just going, "I can't believe that." I didn't think that was possible. Now, he wasn't saying it's over, but it was like, okay, this is the plan and we're going for a cure. And that was a lifeline. And it was pretty exciting, I suppose. It was a long road ahead of me, but that was a pretty exciting thing. So we decided to go for the surgery first and then into chemotherapy as quickly as I could.
I'll get straight back to that conversation, but first I wanted to thank Lloyds Pharmacy for supporting The Good Glow. Lloyds Pharmacy offer a range of services, including blood pressure measurement, BMI checks, emergency contraception, skin analysis, and an express prescription service. One-to-one private consultations are available with pharmacists or with their highly trained health coaches or skin consultants. Many of their pharmacies are open late and on weekends. For a full list of services and great offers, head over to lloydspharmacy.ie.
And this is the really, I think, cool part of cancer research and the cool part of my story. So my grandmother on my father's side would have died when I was, I think, very young, maybe 3. And it would have been the same type of cancer that I had. But, you know, 30-odd years ago, the surgeries would have been huge. They wouldn't have been able to diagnose it properly. So, you know, having that disease then was just, you know, it was a death sentence. There was no surviving it. But, you know, I had a pretty large liver resection, you know, which is a massive surgery. And then I walked out 4 days later and I was on chemotherapy 2 weeks later. And chemotherapy is toxic and hard and it's tough in your body and it's psychologically difficult. It's really scary. I almost think the word chemotherapy is more scary than cancer. I mean, when I heard I had to do chemotherapy, that's really tough. But to be able to walk out 4 days later and then start chemotherapy, that was, you know, the fact that I didn't have to wait months of recovery to be well enough to start, that's the lifesaver. And that's really why I think cancer research is just incredible. And imagine what we can do in 10 years if we raise money for this. And, you know, there's just these cool new techniques and drugs coming up every year. And yeah, it's just incredible to think where we'll be in 10 or 20 years.
And how is Aoife at this point? Obviously, you spoke about the miscarriage and she's trying to keep you strong, trying to stay positive, probably trying to communicate with friends, family. It's a lot for her to be going through at that time.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge for her. It's more, I always think it was more of a big deal. It was more of a thing for her than me, because she and our work, both our workplaces were brilliant and supportive, but for her, she became my personal nurse, you know, after surgery and the surgeries and through the chemotherapy and things like that. I was pretty much useless for 6 months, just, you know, on chemotherapy, really just a shell and you know, not someone to have a good conversation with or go for dinner with or anything like that. So yeah, she just dropped tools and looked after me, and that was unbelievable considering what she'd been through. So yeah, she's the hero, big time.
I love the way you speak about her. It's so lovely. And then, so when you're thinking about that lump under your arm, how do you figure that whole thing out? Like do you feel like that lump under your arm almost saved your life?
Yeah. Aoife calls it the lucky lump.
The lucky lump.
Yeah. And it was nothing.
What did it feel like?
I felt like I was quite paranoid at the time because I just had cancer. So anything that was going to go wrong, I was going to be calling Ollie. And it was a tiny little lump.
Like a pea kind of?
Yeah, like a pea, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe smaller than a pea even. But, you know, you hear so many cancers start with a lump. So, you know, that was something that really jumped out to me. But it had nothing to do with anything. It was pure fluke that it caught. It made me go in for that scan and found out that I now had cancer in my liver. In a really weird situation, I've had late stage cancer, stage 4 cancer, and I've never had a symptom of cancer ever. If you took a blood test of me the whole way through, my marker levels were never increased. You would have never known from a blood test that I had cancer. Still to this day, I've never. You wouldn't know it from my blood tests. It's only from the scans. I'm completely lucky that I actually even went for scans or scopes or anything like that.
Wow. So when you're in chemotherapy, do they say, are they waiting till the end of chemo to kind of go in and have another look and see where you're at? Or did you kind of know what was going on at that point?
Yeah, you had, well, for my program anyway, you had, I was doing a systematic wipe of my system. So it wasn't just targeted for liver or bowel. I was doing full body chemotherapy. So yeah, 6 months, it was every 2 weeks. It's the classic sitting in the dentist chemo chair for, you know, 5 to 8 hours a day when you get it. And then you go home with a pump. You've got a chest port, a port put into your chest so you can take the chemotherapy easier. And yeah, it really does go in cycles for the way it went for me and the people I was doing beside. You go in for a session, you're all right for the first 2 or 3 hours. You start to get a bit tired, it just starts to build and build. They have you on some pretty good steroids, so you don't feel too bad for a day afterwards, and then you just crash. And it's probably 5 days of just building yourself back up. And that's kind of the way they put it for me. It was you take a big dose of chemotherapy for kind of 2 days, and then your immune system, you know, everything takes a hit, and then you've got 10 days to build yourself back up to get another one. And then do it again, and then do it again. And the idea is that it kills any cancer cells in your body without killing you.
It's an amazing way to describe it.
Yeah.
When you're sitting in the chemo chair and you kind of look around, and are you thinking to yourself, like, how am I sitting here?
I think it's that fight thing again. I kind of live in the moment, and you're getting on with it. But chemotherapy is a funny thing, and I think anyone who's listening, who's going through cancer, one thing I say is, you know, people get a plan at the start, but the plans don't always go exactly the way they're supposed to. So one night after one of my chemotherapy sessions, I was taken into the ER thinking I was having a heart attack. One of the other days I went into, had a huge anaphylactic reaction, couldn't breathe, eyes closed, nose closed, totally swelled up. So you just, you know, you got to kind of roll with the punches with it, and it doesn't always go perfectly. And it's, I don't think it's something to get freaked out by if your doctor comes in and says, oh, we got to change this or we got to change that, because it happens to everyone, you know?
Yeah, that's really good, because I remember when I was getting chemo, I was so freaked that I'd have a reaction and then they'd change my chemo.
Yes.
You know, because it just felt like then things weren't sticking to the plan. I think that's such good advice.
You're dead right. And you get the plan at the start, and that's what you have in your head. That's what's going to cure me. And then actually my best friend's dad, who had cancer, really bad cancer, 20 years before me, actually, I had a cup of tea with him before I started. And that's the one thing he said to me. He was like, look, it doesn't always go to plan. They might change things. Don't get freaked out if they do. Because I think 6 weeks into chemo, my liver function went way down. So they changed the drugs. And then that kind of obviously freaked me out a bit. I was like, oh, this isn't the best way to do it. And then the anaphylactic reaction was pretty scary. And they had to change things a little bit again. So, you know, I think it's part and parcel. For your body just gets so worn out from surgeries and just getting hit from so much chemo that, you know, at some stage it just has to kind of say, here, calm down and just back off for a minute. And I think that's what happened with me. I think it was my 9th cycle, and I had this huge reaction, and it was just my body saying, I can't take any more of this. And I actually went back on the same drugs 2 weeks later, and we did it slower and it was fine. But yeah, there's only so much of that stuff you can take. Mm. It's really horrible.
It's almost like with chemo, it's like they know exactly how much to give you until you're at the very edge where you can't, you physically and mentally can't take any more. And then it's like, for me, then it was over and I was like, oh my God, thank God, I wouldn't have been able to do one more session. It just felt so like it just sucked the life out of me.
So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think they really take it to the edge. Mm. I remember the last day of my of chemo, and I just, you form such a close bond with your nurses who are just amazing, and they become such close friends, and then it's just like, okay, that's it. It's over. Go for a scan. Oh, the scan's clear. It's like, okay, you don't have cancer anymore. Go about your day.
So that's what happened. It was gone.
Yeah, it was gone. They'd cut it out with the surgery. There was no sign of it after the chemo, and I was having a scan every month when I was going through chemo. I was all clear, and that was it. You get a scan every 12 weeks, or sorry, I was getting a scan every 4 weeks, and then they moved me out to 12 weeks. And then they tried to move me out to every 6 months, and then I wouldn't let them because I, you know, paranoid. And then he said, listen, we can't keep scanning every 12 weeks. So actually the last set of scans, I was moved out to every 6 months. But you just have this team who are really looking after you. And 2.5 years clear now, which I just can't believe. It's unbelievable. And to be able to go and do a challenge like I just did with all my friends and people is just, yeah, it's so cool.
It was amazing to watch. And I actually watched this documentary on Netflix last week called 7 Yards. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about this American footballer who was paralyzed from the neck down and told he had a 3% chance of ever feeling anything again. And I won't give away the ending, but it's one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen. But what really stood out for me was the friends just rallied, family, the human connection. Like, obviously you were in London, but did you feel just this support of everyone getting you through it? Like, what was that like being treated in a different country?
Yeah, I mean, so the idea of my first, the idea of this challenge initially was anyone who helped me through cancer, come and swim a mile with me. I'm fit enough to do it and I want to get back to fitness.
So how long was this after chemo?
6 months. So I came up with the idea when I was getting chemo and I thought, I need a big challenge. I want to get back fit. I want to see everyone. So, you know, everyone can run, everyone can cycle, but I think people are probably a little bit freaked out about swimming.
So you picked swimming.
So let's do swimming. And, okay, I think I can probably get back to all right fitness by May. So 6 months, give yourself 6 months. And, okay, how's this going to work? And then I was thinking a mile is a really good difference, and mile a day in May kind of rhymes, so let's do that. And the first one was brilliant because it answers your question really well. So Ollie swam a mile with me, the surgeon.
In Ireland?
I did half the miles in London, half the miles in Dublin.
Okay.
Ollie swam a mile with me. Chemo nurses swam a mile with me. You know, friends who, one great example is two friends of ours. You know, this was during the really bad times when everything was falling apart. They went and did a week shop in Waitrose and dropped it over to us. Didn't even knock on the door. Left it outside the door and then called us when they were leaving and said, there's a week shop outside for you. Like, stuff like that. It changes
your day, your week, your month.
Totally. It's something you don't have to think about or do when you weren't even, you know, you couldn't have done it. And even down to, you know, your great friends who just send you texts all the time just to keep your spirits up, you know, because that's really important. And actually, that's another thing just about cancer patients. I think I think people get a little bit scared of cancer patients, and they back off and they leave them to themselves and they let them kind of deal with their own things a lot. And I did find that people maybe, I don't know if they get scared of you or they think you're, you know, that they should just leave you to it. But you know, let the patient make that decision. Keep in touch with your friends if they're going through something bad. And I really appreciate it. Everyone who stayed in touch is amazing. And yeah, that swim, I had 45 people swim with me and they all did something to kind of help me through. There was mates who went to appointments with me. There was just people who stayed in touch. So yeah, I think friends are key to getting through things.
Mm. I imagine the swim with Ollie was pretty special, was it?
Yeah, it was massive. Yeah, that was really a really special one. And he said to me at the end, so we did in a pool, and we got two lanes and we were going for it, and we were going toe for toe, and he's a fit guy. We were going toe for toe the whole way. And this is like really good because, you know, I think it's so a mile is 66 lengths of a 25 meter pool. It's actually 65, but you have to come back to get your stuff, so it's 66. So we went toe for toe the whole way, and then he said to me at the end, "I couldn't let you beat me." And I was like, "That is so cool. You've just done a huge surgery on me." And I, you know, 6 months ago, I was totally wrecked, and now we're here swimming a mile, and we went for a pint afterwards.
God, that's amazing. Amazing. I remember I did, my surgeon is the chairman of Breast Cancer Ireland, so I'm an ambassador for Breast Cancer Ireland, and we were at the start line 1 year, and he's like, "How long do you think it's going to take you?" And I was like, "I'm going to, if it kills me, I am going to run faster than I've ever run in my life to beat him." I think he beat me, but he always asked me then, you know, in appointments and stuff, you know, "What's your time for a 5K now?" Isn't that amazing?
Oh, yeah, really amazing. And Lorna was my chemo nurse, and she did a lot, but when I was having that huge reaction, she came in and she gave me a big injection in the chest, and that was another one that I was just like, "I'm swimming a mile with Lorna in the pool, and this is ridiculous. I can't believe this is happening." So yeah, just some really special people.
Yeah. Amazing. And not only emotional for you, but what, I mean, the reward, you know, that they feel to see someone they've helped get back on their feet must be just incredible. Going for a pint afterwards. What do you talk about?
I think it is. I really do think it's nice for them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they lose a lot of patients, and that's got to be, I mean, it's got to be so hard on them. Because you do, like, myself and Aoife formed a really close bond with Ollie, and he's a great guy. And, you know, I consider him a good friend. So to go for a pint with him after having a good competition in the pool is pretty cool. What do we talk about? I think, for the first time, probably we just talked about normal stuff instead of cancer, you know, properly just normal stuff. So, yeah, that was a nice thing.
They're the good days.
Totally.
So you raised over 80,000 euro.
Yeah, last time we raised 85,000, and that all went to cancer research. So that's really what I think my challenge is focused on is cancer research. And 30 years ago, my granny had the had the problem that she was in the wilderness compared to what we have now. And now we're in a great place that we have, you know, my second surgery was done with a thing called the Da Vinci robot. So to cut out part of my liver, they inserted a surgical robot in me, and the surgeon did the operation from across the room on a computer.
Wow.
They can zoom in to 16 times your eyesight. So they can get really precise on what they're cutting. And that's just such a cool tool. CT scans, MRIs, PET scans, laparoscopic surgery. So you're not taking weeks and months to recover from big surgeries. This is what research is doing. And even on the drug side of things, you know, I felt nauseous on chemo, but I never really got sick. And that's because of the advancements in anti-nausea and steroids and things like that. So it's right across the board. It's drugs, it's surgical, it's care. That's what I kind of hope for the next 10 years is that the more cash we get into this thing, this can get even better for people. And half of us will get cancer. So this is something that's going to help everyone.
God, you're doing amazing work. Mm. A Mile a Day in May couldn't go ahead in 2020 because of everything that was going on. So 2021, was it always the plan to do it again?
Yeah, it's a great thing. It's such a huge undertaking though. I'm worried now that I have to do it for the rest of my life. That's such a huge undertaking.
And this year, of course, you couldn't swim in a pool.
No pools. Yeah.
So it was the sea every day.
So it's the sea. And then you're dependent on nature because... Mm-hmm. There's a storm. I have to swim 31 miles, 31 days. So, this could be tricky. That's what I thought at the start. I was like, well, actually, what I thought at the start was I got in for a swim in March on Killiney Beach and I went about 100 meters and I just thought, I don't know if I could do this. This is so hard. And trained during March and April. And then, that was my big worry that there was going to be, May's a volatile month. You can get a storm comes through and then that can completely wreck your chances of doing this challenge and finishing it. So, I found the last time I got stronger and stronger as the month went on. And that's what happened this time as well. So I really felt bulletproof at the end of it. In the 20s, you just feel super strong.
I was lucky enough to go out and see you yesterday and... first of all, I'm a really bad swimmer. So I was like, I can't believe how fast he's swimming. I was like, it's like he's a fish. And then I was like, no, it's actually more like he's a boat. Like you were going that fast. But I was looking at your face as you were swimming. And you looked very calm. Like what's going through your mind out on those swims? Because are you thinking about everything you've been through? Or is it different on different days?
Yeah. Different on different days. Yesterday I was thinking about the challenge and I was thinking about friends who'd been going through cancer, and I got a lot of text messages during the swim and people saying they were crying at the end of their swim, and this happened a lot. That it's a nice downtime because a mile will take you about an hour to swim a mile. And so it's a lot of time in the water just, having to think to yourself. So yeah, yesterday, some of the miles are really emotional if you're swimming with someone who's got someone going through cancer. Some of them are just really good fun. Like the 30th mile I swam with a friend, Lynn, and I mean, we were just chatting all the way out in Sea Point and it was great crack. And you know, that's one of those days. It was really sunny and it was just a really nice day. And then, every day is different, I think.
Mm.
Yesterday's, and every day throws up something a bit different. One day, I mean, this was one of the days that the swim took a while. And a seal followed us as close as I am to you for the whole hour 20 minutes. Like, and seals are, they're not the greatest things to be near. And there's all those old wives' tales that they nip you.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's true or not. I think I've come in touch with probably 20 or 30 seals this May and didn't get any nips.
Wow. And Aoife swam the last bit with you.
Yeah, she swam the first mile mm-hmm. with me, and she swam the first mile the last time as well. And she swam the last bit with me yesterday as well, which is really nice. And I had three other friends swim the last bit with me, who've just been amazing. We have rescue out for every swim that we do, and they've just been brilliant about doing rescue for loads of the swims. So it was nice to get the five of us together, and it was a nice finish.
And you've raised over 40,000 so far.
Yeah, I think we're just at 50 this morning.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
And just for anyone listening, I'll post links and stuff to your pages. So that's still open if people want to donate. How has the last couple of years changed you? Are you different?
I think I'm very different. But it's people, I don't know how it was for you, but I think a lot of people maybe finish cancer or get through it somehow, and everything changes. You know, it's like, what was I doing with my life? This, everything needs to change. For me, I just initially became super risk averse. I just felt like I'd just nearly been run over by a bus, but I hadn't been. And I just wanted to be really careful and kind of don't put myself in harm's way. So I still have the same job, and I don't think I've changed a huge amount of my life, but I certainly have a different outlook on things. Yeah, it really makes you appreciate every day.
I saw just when you were coming in yesterday, like I said at the start, just the smiles. When you're in the depths of it, you dream of those days, don't you?
Yeah, yesterday was just brilliant. I had all the friends and family and people who'd swam with me, and just able to have fun with people without having to talk about cancer or anything like that. Just having good crack with people, and it was sunny and the weather was nice, and I was happy. I was happy every day this month. It's such a great thing to do, Yeah, it's weird. People kind of get in touch a couple of days after the swim, and they're like, "Jesus, that was really tough." And I'd kind of be totally fine going through the 20s and then up to yesterday. And then I finished the swim yesterday, and about half an hour after we talked, I had no energy left, and I'm still completely knackered now.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's some sort of weird link between your brain and your body that your body's able to just keep going. And then your brain knows there's a finish line somewhere. And it keeps your body going. And then you finish, and then that's it, shut down. So, yeah, I think I really felt that yesterday.
Do you think your purpose in life has changed?
I want to be a ruthless fundraiser for cancer research. Shake people down for any money they have so we can get into this charity. It's just incredible. You know, I think it's every 24 grand we raise, we can fund a PhD researcher for a year. And that is like a real focus for me. And I think it's something really good. And I think it's something that'll benefit people for a long time. And it's something that my family's been really affected by. And I think the more research we can do, the better. And yeah, I think it's definitely affected my life. But we'll see. I probably will have some big life changes, in the years ahead. But for right now, I'm just kind of happy to be here and happy to be back to a nearly normal life.
Your family are gorgeous. I know your sister Amy well. I know how horrible the last few years has been for her too. And I know how she speaks of you, and it's pride. You know, I'm sure it's always been like that, but especially over everything you've been through. Do you look to the future? I know you just said that you live in the now, but for you and Aoife, like what's next? You're back in Ireland now, and will you go back to London, or do you think ahead?
Yeah, I think, we're just going to have to see how COVID goes and things like that, but yeah, I think we just want to live life to the best we possibly can, because we know the rug can get pulled from under you so quickly. And in my case, it can just get pulled without any warning, no symptoms, nothing. So we really know what a bad day is, and when we're having good days, it's really, really great. I think that's our outlook on life. We really appreciate the good days.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks very much.
And like I said, I'll put the links in the episode show notes if anyone wants to donate. And I can't wait for next year. I might even try swim a mile with you.
Oh, no, you're definitely swimming a mile with me next year. Yeah.
In a swimming pool, right?
Let's see.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Lloyd's Pharmacy. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review. It really makes a difference. And you can find the Good Glow Wellness Programme over on theGoodGlow.ie.